Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast, and in this episode, we are discussing the 93rd Annual Academy Award winners. It's finally Oscar time. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today is my fellow host, Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
Hey. Oscars are over, and boy, is that a mixed bag.
Yeah, there's mixed responses for sure, but there were certain things that worked and other things that were just like, what? Who authorized this?
Well, we'll definitely be talking about that here in a second. Yeah. You know what? Let's just jump right into it, because what we're going to do for this episode is we're going to recap the winners, but first we're going to talk about the ceremony and specifically, what were they thinking with that best picture choice? So, well, that's part of the minuses, I would say, section. So hold tight. Hold tight. So the producers of this year's ceremony were Steven Soderbergh, Jesse Collins, and Stacey Scherr, and they insisted on nominees being present at the ceremony or at a designated location live. In other words, no pre-recorded speeches, which is why you didn't see at the very end. A lot of people were asking, why wasn't Anthony Hopkins there? Well, he's 83 years old, and there's a pandemic. So he didn't want to leave his home in Wales and brave through a pandemic to go to London, which is where he would have to go to be there live. And yeah, I don't know why people are actually giving Anthony Hopkins grief about this. Like, he's 83, man. He should be home. It's fine. I don't see the problem with that.
I don't either. And among all of the shade that was thrown at the Academy, it's not like this was an intentional thing where he was like, screw you guys. He was just like, ooh, I like living. You know?
that was literally his mantra. He's like, oh, I was going to go, but man, life, right? I'm good with
it. Yeah.
He even did a video earlier in the day doing a poem, or I believe it was a poem or something along those lines, a short story, whatever it was, in front of his father's grave, like honoring his father. I'm like, I just feel like he's letting everybody know, I don't want to be here just yet.
Yeah, I guess that's probably what that means.
Don't go gently into that good night, I believe is what it was. So I'm just saying. I don't know. What did you think about this call? Because this was a big call with the Academy this year. You know, a lot of award shows were doing Zoom meetings and whatnot. And the Academy said, no, we're not going to do that. You got to show up live. Or you can't be part of it. You got to be sure. Now, granted, they gave different locations around the world. There's a few different locations around the world. That's why you saw some people live. But they had to be where the Academy deemed them to be. They couldn't just call in from their house. Mm-hmm. How did you feel about that call?
It's troubling. I don't like the idea of forcing them to not. Like, you have to be live at our designated location, or you have to be live in our studio area. But at the same time, you also have the choice to just decline altogether, like Anthony Hopkins did, and just have the Academy accept on your behalf if you were that concerned. Now, I'll say I was impressed at mostly how they managed the Union Station setup. You know, where they had people still wearing masks, although it was majority of the time, I don't think I really saw too many people wearing masks. And I thought everybody would be kind of seated separately, and it looked that way at first. And then towards the end, I noticed that, oh, no, they just kind of like have some people grouped together.
They're just like spaced out is what they were. But some were like right next to each other. I mean, like Daniel Kaluuya and Glenn Close are doing the butt right next to each other. Dancing on top of each other pretty much.
I loved that moment. But so that was, I don't know. It's my only thing is that, yes, that's quite hypocritical. And I know people have given me flack for saying this. I don't mean to say, like, this isn't a statement one way or the other on masks or anything. I believe in science, and I'll say that. But my whole thing is, this is the general celebrity group that fills the Academy seats. The Academy nominee and winner seats are, for the most part, the same people who were preaching for the past year, wear your masks, don't go places, stay home. And I get we're kind of moving through a different time period and like things are adjusting, but we're not fully there yet. So it did feel super hypocritical to be like, nah, you gotta be there, man. You gotta come, or you've gotta go to this other location so that way you're live. And I don't know. I just don't know how I feel about that kind of requirement to be honored. Like, most people, unless you've already won an Academy Award a few times or something, you want to be there and you want to do your acceptance speech. So do you really have a choice? Not really. I mean, in the scheme of things, it's like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for many people.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm sure they were tested up and down. I know they were tested a lot and everything else. But, I mean, if anything, this past year has taught you that can get through. You know, you can be asymptomatic. You can be in too early a stage to test positive but still spread it. You know, there's a lot of factors. And I'm not judging one way or the other. I do find it interesting that in California, I don't know if anybody else could pull this off, could have this arrangement. And I don't know if that's fair. You know, I don't really know if that's fair. Like, I get it. You're the movie industry. You're the entertainment industry. It's very important in California, but I don't know if that should give you special favor. Designation. I love movies, and I do think there is an argument to be made that movies and television have been essential over the past year because it's kept many of us from losing our minds. On the same token, an awards for it, not essential to me. They were deemed essential, basically, workers for this. And I'm just like, no, I could see the art being considered essential. I could make that argument in my head, even though I don't, you know, doctors, nurses, transportation, grocery clerks, they come way ahead of this. But at least I can see, you know, some of that. Awards? No, that's not essential. You could have done a Zoom call. I'm sorry if it doesn't look as pretty, but you could have. So that's one thing. But teach your own. I'm just saying, stop giving Anthony Hopkins grief. The guy made the right call. He made the right call. It's not his fault. They chose to be complete assholes with how they handled the end of the show. My opinion. Because you just made, I'm just going to segue to that real quick because I want to mention it. They put Best Picture near the end, where Best Picture
third to last.
Has always been dead last because it's the biggest award. And instead, they put Best Actress and Best Actor after Best Picture. Now, the understanding seems to be, by many accounts, that it was because they expected Chadwick Boseman to win Best Actor and they were going to leave on a tribute. Well, instead, Anthony Hopkins won and he wasn't present. So it was literally the most anticlimactic Oscars I've ever seen. You know, it's just like, oh, he's not here. Bye. See you guys. And in my opinion, the reason why I use the word asshole, and I know it's very strong, but I'm sorry, Academy, you earned it this time, or Soderbergh, or whoever made that decision. You just basically put, and this is nothing to do with Hopkins or Boseman or anyone else, you just made the actors more important than the movie. And to me, that is already a problem in this industry where many of the crew don't feel like they're as important as the actors. And you just basically said, we're going to say these are the two most important awards because we're banking on a possibility that didn't come to fruition. I just think everything about that says everything that's wrong with the Academy these days.
Yeah, I mean, elevating any individual above another in general is kind of crappy. Well, I shouldn't say individual because there are performances that are better, but I mean, like the occupations, if you will. Like to say that a director is more important than a cinematographer or that an actor is more important than a stunt actor. Like you can't place them above one another because they all have significant importance and couldn't, you know, without it, the movie wouldn't be what it is.
It's
at all.
One's more prominently in front of your face. Doesn't mean they're not just as important, you know?
Exactly. And so I agree with you. I mean, I think it does send a really weird message behind our eyes and into our minds, or for the actors to be like, this is the glory. But it's, I don't know, it's supposed to be about the movies. It's supposed to be about the art, not the people. And quite honestly, and now I haven't seen The Father, so I can't speak to Anthony Hopkins' performance, but he and Frances McDormand are both class act talented actors. I don't know that at least Frances's performance was more deserving, like significantly better than Best Picture, like than the whole movie of all the movies. You know, that's just weird to me that they placed it in that order. And I don't think you should ever make a logistics decision based on a presumption.
Yeah, well, doesn't that
possibility?
Doesn't that make it almost come across like, oh, if it would have been, let's just say it would have been Chadwick Boseman, doesn't then it seem like either way this backfires. Either way, if he wins and his widow comes out and does a speech, which I'm sure would have been very graceful and wonderful, but doesn't then it feel like it's rigged at that point? Like there's no win by doing that. There's literally no win, because then it looks like the Academy knew ahead of time, where for eons they've proclaimed that they don't know until the night of the award ceremony, when it's, you know, nobody knows. Only their accounting house knows. And so everything about that just said, we're hedging our bets and we'll see how it plays out. And it really backfired. And I don't think there's any way that it doesn't backfire in this situation. I think it was just poorly, poorly, poorly orchestrated. And up until that moment was actually a pretty enjoyable event. I really thought this is, I agree with you on the hypocritical nature of it. Very hypocritical. But in terms of just in watching the show as an Oscar fan, like I have every single year for the last, as long as I've been alive that I can recall, it was actually making the best of a bad situation, and I enjoyed it. And then it came to the end and I'm like, you just ruined your whole show by that. You literally ruined your whole show just by that stupid move.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say to their credit about how they handled and managed the acceptance awards speeches, there is one significant complication if you have pre-recorded speeches and you don't know who the nominees or who the winner is going to be. You know, somebody's going to have to ruffle through super fast and be like, okay, let me make sure I get the right clip playing and not the wrong one. I guess I can see that's too much additional, you know, there's too many possibilities that something will happen.
It's five buttons. Johnny's got to pick one of five buttons. Johnny, you can do it, Johnny. Come on.
But, you know, if you take our Johnny, for example, sometimes you hit the wrong button. And I can see how that would just make a whole disaster of a show. So I can at least extend some grace to that aspect of it. But not allowing them to do a live acceptance, you know, I don't know. There's just, it's complicated for sure. And I think they did mostly a good job of managing the troubles of having this award show be at the middle / moving towards the end of a pandemic, ? I don't know, but they did a decent job. They just really had some serious things that they should have thought more deeply about.
Yeah. Somebody had a really bad day on Monday. I can promise you that. So somebody in charge had a very bad meeting, I'm sure. I'm sure socially distanced, but there are probably things being thrown in their direction, be my guess.
Yeah.
Well, Union Station's where they set it up this year for the Oscars, which is interesting. You know, it wasn't inside the Dolby Theater, which is a more enclosed location, and here we only have the nominees and their guests. So it is much more condensed in that respect and a little bit more open air. I was really bummed I didn't see a transient like walk by. That would have been kind of a fun little homage, nod to the environment. But what did you think of this setup for the Oscars? Like Union Station in terms of, you know, I thought it looked pretty sharp.
Yeah. I mean, it looked beautiful. It was weird to see how close the stage was to the people, the seating people, because normally they're so far away that it feels like the stage is really elevated. And here it felt like somebody was about to give a PowerPoint presentation. So it was pretty, but it was a little.
Who's got the clicker?
Right. It was intimate, but I do think they did a decent enough job of spacing people out so that way they can not always have their masks on. It's just, again, still questionable about like seating the groups together of people.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of that was aesthetics because they want it to look.
Yeah.
They don't want it to look like you're always thinking about the pandemic, you know?
And that's for sure.
Got the vibe from. And, you know, I want to segue from that because I like the setup. I thought it was really interesting. I really did like the choice Soderbergh made. I assume it was Soderbergh to shoot it in he shot it on digital, but through a film filter or something like that. So it looks very cinematic in terms of the presentation. So many of the shots and the award speeches and whatnot were captured almost in a film-like quality. And I did like that. I thought that was a nice touch for the circumstances. Mm-hmm. Another thing, and we'll segue into pluses of the event. A lot of people didn't like this. I think people preferred seeing the clips of the performances and stuff like that. I actually like this very personal approach to where instead of clips from various performances or clips from the movie that they're being nominated for, you got a little inside detail on their either personal lives or professional lives, their aspirations. Like, I just like that, getting to know a little bit more about nominees that I didn't know a lot about. What did you think about that angle?
Oh, yeah. I thought that was excellent. And it makes it a little bit more about the art and why that person was drawn to that role or what they did to accomplish that role, and less about, you know, one moment. And I think for some people, if they haven't seen the movies, maybe that's why they like to see the clips, because they don't know how to judge those performances. And I do understand that it's a lot of content to watch, you know, all of the nominees, but I think it's still doable if you just watch stuff throughout the year. And that's why people go and watch these award shows, is because they've seen the majority of these films, or they've seen a large portion and they want to see who gets to take home the trophy. So it didn't bother me at all that they removed that. And it was, again, very intimate in the guest host or the presenter of the award talking to that person and saying, hey, with your role, X, Y, Z, you know, this was really impressive, and I know this was very personal to you, or, you know, whatever it might be. Those special extras were more important to me than just watching something I've already seen.
Yeah, I like that. Very, very intimate. That's true. And you know, you got presenters that are down on the floor. They're sitting right next to them. I kind of like that vibe. It just felt mm-hmm. like a much more personable Oscars. And I think this is the third year they've done it without a host. I'm actually fine without a host. You know, I kind of missed the opening. Regina King did a great job of like opening the show and getting us into the vibe. On the same token, I miss the big Billy Crystal number at the beginning, or the Hugh Jackman number at the beginning. Just that thing where you get a little movie pizzazz before you get into the show, and then you get some quips as you go. But on the same token, I mean, a lot of actors can provide those quips, and you know, there's something to be said for, instead of getting that, we're getting a long, drawn out Harrison Ford is mad that he had to leave his house speech, you know, basically. And so you get some fun bits along the way.
I also liked that they didn't do a bunch of skits, because the skits are fun when you have that large, grandiose theater to work within and that big stage, and everything feels like, you know, they're watching a performance themselves, the actors that are there waiting for the award show. Mm-hmm. This was so intimate in so many different ways that I actually really liked how everything flowed, that there wasn't skits. You know, there was the one quick moment where they had the game and stuff, and of course Glenn Close doing her dance.
Oh man, that was fantastic. Like, that was the only game incredible. They had, and I'm like, I don't know why you've never done this before, probably because it probably will only work once. The fact that Glenn Close knows hip-hop this well, but and can do the debut, I think that's fantastic. It just, like, everything about that was great. Everything about
that. And I love that moment. Okay, so whenever someone is, they underestimate you, and you come back and you're like, hold on a minute, let me show you what I really know.
Yeah, because he's ready to move on. He's like, oh, you don't know this. Let's bring up a different song. And she's like, no, hold up.
Yeah. Like, I really appreciate that. I think that happens so often to people who are young. And I know it happens to me, where people will be like, ah, you're too young, you don't know that. And I'm like, actually, I do, though. And so I could relate to her, where she was like, he was implying that this wouldn't be her genre or her understanding. And she's like, oh, no, this is 100% in my wheelhouse. Let me get up and shake it. So it was really, really fun and engaging. And I agree with you. I don't think it will always work. I'll say in the beginning of it, I don't think it worked the way they intended with Andra Day. But damn, the shade she threw. It was entertaining to me.
You kind of got to admire that, right? Like, she was just...
Yes!
She's like, oh, no, of course it wasn't nominated because it's the Academy, bitches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, that was great. I'm like, oh, you didn't expect that, but she did it. Good for her.
I loved it.
Yeah, that was great. And it really makes me mad that Purple Rain didn't even get nominated. Are you serious? I assumed it won because it's that fantastic.
Iconic.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I assumed it too. And when it was like, she said, nah, I probably wasn't even nominated because it's the Academy. And then it happened that it was never even nominated. I was like, oh, ooh, this is awkward.
And accurate. Awkwardly yep. accurate. What are your biggest minuses with the show? Or unless you had more pluses, like more things that really stood out to you as positive. Either way.
I mean, overall, I really enjoyed the way that they handled this. The minuses for me, the first one is, okay, first and foremost, the best picture we already talked about. That should for sure be at the end. It's just so weird and dumb and just a poor decision to not have it at the end because, A, that's what people are waiting for. So if you do it early, people are going to jump ship from your telecast. And so you're going to lose viewers early. That doesn't seem like a really sure. smart decision. But the thing that really bothered me otherwise in this is the in memoriam was like, now I could understand that there was like the music was different than we anticipated, but it was supposed to be more of like a celebration of life. But because they used a faster song, I presume, the in memoriam flew by because it was trying to keep up with that beat. And I was like, some of these I can barely read the name because you have to, they put the name in a different spot. So I got to find the name and then I got to read the name. And I'm like, who was that? I didn't even get to see because I'm trying to look at their picture and see what kind of work they did because that's the kind of stuff that I like to see in the in memoriam. I like to see, you know, where I actually have a moment to honor them, see them in their work, like in their passion. That's the kind of cool stuff to see and recognize and honor for people that maybe you don't recognize their name, but you see them doing their thing and you're like, oh, I don't know you, but you just really, you really loved what you did and you did some awesome stuff. So honor to you. But the pacing, some people flew by faster than others. It was just altogether, I was not a fan.
Yeah. That was basically how the, in memoriam went. Unless they really liked the person, then you could tell they hovered on them for a little bit longer. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
So instead of the old applause where we got the applause meter, which is, you know, the most popular people got the best applause and the people that aren't known didn't hear, you know, crickets. Essentially, they did that with the speed and depth at which the names are thrown out there. So some of them, if they're not known, they basically, it was like the old animation where you would just draw pictures on the pages and then flip through them real quick. That's basically how that was done. But if you were known, well, you got a few seconds. You know, Carl Reiner's up there for 45 minutes. Everybody else.
So, yeah.
Hey, what are you going to do?
I mean, DMX even flew by. I was like, okay, give me a minute for my dude.
Yeah. I mean, he outshined Steven Seagal for crying out loud. Like, give him a chance. Exit wound shout out. All right, so just overall for the event itself, if you have to give a score for this year's event, what would it be from 1 to 10? 10 being a masterpiece, 1 being, I don't want to watch this again.
Probably a 6. 550 or 6. The faults that they had were pretty significant to me, so I'll probably keep it at a 6 because I still enjoyed it, and they were still good on their timing. You know, it didn't run super long or anything.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But, you know, those two flubs that I talked about, those big minuses really, really hurt my enjoyment of the show. And it's funny because they happened right around the same time. It was In Memoriam and then Best Picture. So if you're like Aaron and you went to pee at the end of the In Memoriam and you came back to Best Picture and you wonder, how long did I pee for? Because I must have missed both of the acting categories. No, it's just weird that they flubbed that whole section.
I want to thank you for sharing that private moment.
You're welcome.
I'm not going to tell you any stories again. I'll tell you that. I'm not doing it. Well, here's what I would say. I would say 6 as well because I did enjoy it. It was probably an 8 until Best Picture. Honestly, that just really pissed me off. I mean, I can't even tell. It's not even like a critical thing where I just think, well, that was ill-advised or poorly decided. I thought it was really just shitty. Honestly, I just thought it was a bad thing to do to everybody involved, especially people that work on those films. I just ill-advised. I saw what they were going for, but it was a poor decision.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we're going to get to the winners in just a minute. But first, New today on digital and on demand, Georgina Campbell from Black Mirror and Luke Benward star in the pulse-pounding action thriller Wildcat, when an ambitious reporter stationed in the Middle East is taken captive by a dangerous militant group who believes she is a CIA operative. She must find a way to survive and turn the tables on her assailants before they carry out a deadly terrorist attack. You can buy or rent Wildcat today on digital and on demand. It's rated R from Paramount Pictures. If you listened to last week's episode, you would have heard my review on Wildcat. I did enjoy it. I do recommend it. And if you want a chance to win one of five digital copies of Wildcat, email us by May 4th, 2021 to contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com. That's contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Just in the subject line, use the title Wildcat and tell us your name. And we will be picking five winners from there and letting you know accordingly. So don't forget, Wildcat. Now available on digital and on demand. As far as our show, remember you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com, join our Facebook group, or we're on Twitter @buypopcorn. But right now we're going to hit the winners from the Oscars. Some of these we're going to be like in memoriam. Some of them will go by faster. Some of them will go by longer. It just depends. We'll see where we're at. So we're going to start in the order that they did. And by the way, Best Picture will be last, as it should be. So if you didn't watch it, you're going to hear all the winners. But I'm just letting you know, Best Picture's last. We're not changing that. I don't care what the Academy does. We're not doing it. You ready, Amanda?
I'm ready.
All right. So I'm going to throw out the category and the nominees. No, we're not going through all the names. We're just going through the movies. And then, Amanda, you just call off who won. And we'll discuss it if you'd like. Best Production Design. Nominees were The Father, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Mank, News of the World, and Tenet. And the winner was?
Mank.
What do you think about
really
that?
Not really surprised.
What do you think about it?
Not really surprised by this one. I mean, I expected Mank to earn more awards, spoiler alert, but I wasn't surprised by the production design for this because, especially when you're thinking about how they had to set this up for a black and white style, I get it. I do understand it. You know, you have to really look at the set design and sure. say, this is going to translate well to black and white because you're really only looking at shades. You're not looking at colors. And so I can see how this went there.
I have long said that Mank is the most beautifully shot nap I've had in a long time. It's just a delightfully boring movie that meanders and is horribly self-indulgent in terms of story, but it looks fantastic. I have no problem with it winning production design. It does look beautiful. If it would have won Best Picture, I don't even know if I'd be doing this podcast because I'd be laughing so hard. I just don't think it deserved it. I mean, you're right. I kind of expected it to win more just because Hollywood likes Hollywood and their movies tend to do well. Sometimes they even think they win when it's really Moonlight. So I expect it to be some more Mank in the tank. But thankfully, we only got a couple. So Best Production Design, I'm okay with it. Best Visual Effects. Nominees were Love and Monsters, The Midnight Sky, Mulan, The One and Only Ivan, and Tenet. And the Oscar went to?
Tenet.
I mean, it makes sense. I was pulling for Love and Monsters. You were as well, I think, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I was really hoping that they would. And I understand why they went with Tenet because they had such a big budget to make things so visually impactful, but I also wish that they would take into consideration these more independent films and how much harder they have to work to make things come across so beautiful with a more limited budget. And so that's something that really stood out to me for Love and Monsters was I was really impressed by that, by their visual effects.
Yeah. Yeah, everything you just said, it works great. Tenet had some fantastic effects, but I'll be honest, I remember Love and Monsters more.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the effects more, and I thought they were really interesting creature designs, and they really, because you know the budget was a lot less than what Tenet had to work with, and I think the effects were just as good, if not better. So, whatever. Okay.
Sad times.
Moving on. And to be honest, in this year, there weren't as many for competition. So I do think you probably would have saw some different titles had many of the blockbusters come out last year.
Mm-hmm.
But because of that, you saw a lot of smaller films getting more notice than they probably would have. Best Documentary Short, Colette, A Concerto is a Conversation, Do Not Split, Hunger Ward, and A Love Song for Latasha. And the Oscar went to?
Colette.
which that's the one about Nazi occupied France, right? And it's it's a woman who's facing her history like 75 years after the fact. A lot of people love this story.
Yeah, absolutely. I was wondering if a love song for Latasha would get a win here, but it looks like Colette pulled through.
All right. Best animated short, Burrow, Genius Loci, If Anything Happens, I Love You, Opera, and Yes People. And the winner was if Amanda would tell us. Sorry.
If Anything Happens, I Love You.
And did you see that one? I know we don't see all the shorts for sure.
No, I didn't. But it's that one was the really interesting one on Netflix. So I know about it. And I think I watched part of it. And it was it's about these two parents, and it's really interesting how it was animated. But these two parents are trying to deal with this emotional void with the death of their child to a tragedy. So, this kind of goes back to what a lot of parents are suffering with, especially over the past few years, as we've seen an increase in school shootings. They really wanted to come in and talk about what the parents feel. And that's really what the purpose was about talking about that grief. And so if you haven't seen it, it's short. Go watch it on Netflix.
Well, I mean, I would assume it's short. It won Best Animated Short. If it was really long, I'd feel like that's a weird category then.
Yeah.
But it makes sense in this year because they just do things that don't make any sense. So why not? All right. Best Live Action Short nominees were Feeling Through, The Letter Room, The Present, Two Distant Strangers, and Wide Eye, and Two Distant Strangers won, which is a really good short if you haven't watched it. It's very timely. And I totally stole that again. Oh my God. I just did it. It's a habit. Hey, Amanda, which one won? Sorry.
Two Distant Strangers. Okay. That's okay.
Sorry.
What? This is one that's it's exploring the deaths of Black Americans during their encounters with police. And that is extremely timely, you know, with everything that's happened. I mean, not that it hasn't happened for a long time, but now the general society is coming and making it a consistent topic and concern and requiring change. And so I'm not surprised at all that this one won. Well deserved.
I wasn't either, but I am surprised that I stole the answer again, and I got to stop that. I've hosted this show for so many years, my brain just goes into it, and I forget. So I apologize. That's my fault.
So you're leaving this in here, then? Okay, we're not editing of that out.
No, people should know my faults. I think they deserve to know the truth. And also, I don't want to spend the extra time. Let's be honest. You know, I'm just willing to take the hit.
Fair enough.
Write the email. Go ahead and make yourself happy. Let's go to Best Sound. The nominees are Greyhound, Mank, News of the World, Soul, and Sound of Metal. And the winner is
Sound of Metal. And I'm really, really happy that this one won. It was a great film if you haven't seen it.
I think it was a very deserving film because the whole film centers around the lack of sound, obviously, and the loss of sound. And they do such a brilliant job of mixing the two. Mm-hmm. That I really feel like this category was theirs to begin with. You know what I mean? It just felt right.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Best Film Editing. The nominees were The Father, Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal, and The Trial of the Chicago 7. And the Oscar went to?
Sound of Metal again.
Boom.
Boom.
And that was the lovely category that Harrison Ford presented where he talked about the fact that many editing notes that he had to the editors for Blade Runner were just ridiculous. And he's like, hey, that was a great film. So stop picking our movie apart. I thought that was an interesting insight into the editing process.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I love how they really gave, I don't know if it was during a speech or someone was talking about it, but I recall someone mentioning how you really have to love the work you do. I think it was during the acceptance speech because I think he was thanking his wife for allowing him to spend endless hours with his love affair of film editing.
Yeah.
And it really took me back to when Aaron started this podcast and listening to him talk about editing and how tumultuous that process is. And then my experiences with it. And it's something where I don't think a lot of film editors get the credit they deserve for how hard they're working to make things come together so seamlessly. Because you see or hear the end product, you know, referring to podcasts as well, and it comes together so perfectly, and you don't hear any of the flaws. And yet, if you were there during the initial recording or the initial filming, for example, you'd be like, wow, this is really just jarring and disjointed. And then this person puts it all together and makes it beautiful.
Yeah, and editing matters, man. If you get the wrong editor, you end up with Mortal Kombat, which is a fine enough film, but splotchy as hell. Needed, definitely needed Sound of Metal's editor to make that work. But, and also, I another note on Harrison Ford, I'm officially concerned about Indy 5 because I'm not so sure he was awake through most of his presentation.
Oh.
I'm so excited for Indy 5. When he comes out, I'm like, oh, shit. I actually did the Temple of Doom move. I'm like, oh, shit. Well, we'll see what happens. This is why stuntmen deserve a category of their own, right? Because they're going to have to make him look good.
Absolutely.
All right. Best costume design nominees were Emma, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Mank, Mulan, and Pinocchio. And the Oscar went to?
Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
Isn't it Ma Rainey's Black Bottom?
Ma. Yeah. Did I say it wrong?
You just said it like a whole word.
Oh.
Ma Rainey's. Like it's French.
Yeah. My bad. Not bad. Also, I think it's a fun fact. Anne Roth, who won for the costume design, she made history as the oldest individual to win an Oscar.
Oh, she even beat Anthony Hopkins?
Yeah, she's old.
she's older than us.
She's seasoned.
Yeah, there you go. Like a fine wine or spice or something that's seasoned. I don't know.
Yeah, she's 89, so she just barely beats Anthony Hopkins.
I guess we'll have to keep trying. We'll have to pull another upset in about 10 years. Get that back. All right, best makeup and hairstyling. The nominees were Emma, Hillbilly Elegy, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Mank, and Pinocchio. And the Oscar went to?
Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
Which was also of note because...
Yeah, Mia Neal and Jameika Wilson became the first Black-led hair and makeup team to win an Oscar. We've got a lot of firsts and historical achievements here in the Oscars, which is cool in this moment, but is also very sad when you think about how long the Oscars have been going for and how they're first times for things like this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and but if you're like, well, why is that even worth mentioning? 93. This is the 93rd.
Yeah.
That's a lot of options. Yeah. You know what I mean? A lot of opportunities. So good. That's fantastic. All right. Now we move on to best cinematography. And I love how they said, you know, it's so hard to describe to people because most people don't know what cinematography is. But I love, like, this is where I love the personal touches because they gave each of the nominees kind of like a little line to explain how they would define the importance of cinematography and what's important for them. So I like that touch. That was cool. But the nominees were Judas and the Black Messiah, Mank, News of the World, Nomadland, and The Trial of the Chicago 7. And the award went to
Mank, to no surprise.
Yeah. I mean, I'd give it that. Like I said, beautifully shot. Beautifully shot.
I saw some people who were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. This was such a surprise. This is an upset. And I'm like, how did you not see Mank coming for some of these categories?
Yeah, I mean, I could, in this one, I could see Judas and the Black Messiah. I think that was beautifully shot. And News of the World, it's a Western, but I didn't think it really stuck out in terms of the cinematography. Nomadland, I mean, really, it's just basically handhelds. And I guess if you want to call the shot where she's shitting in a bucket beautiful, fine, but I won't. You know, it's just like it didn't stand out to me. So Mank did. Production-wise, cinematography-wise, how it looked definitely stood out.
Mm-hmm.
If only the movie would have.
The story?
God, just call it Stank. Seriously.
I like these twists on the names you have.
Sorry.
So quippy.
I'll stop. All right, best adapted screenplay. The nominees were Borat's subsequent movie film. Should have been tossed out from the category. Like, it shouldn't even be allowed. So much of that is improv. I don't even understand how that's in here, but whatever. The Father, Nomadland, One Night in Miami, The White Tiger. And the Oscar went to?
The Father, which you definitely raved about.
You still haven't seen The Father, right? That's one you haven't seen?
I haven't. I really, really want to, but I haven't seen it.
I keep telling people, like, as soon as this category came up, I said they need to win. Because The Father is all about dementia and a person wrestling with the past and the now and his perception of where he is in life at that moment. It's beautifully done. And it's so hard to do because it feels so confusing at first to us. I mean, it really puts you in the shoes of someone with dementia. And I think that's very hard to do without feeling like a gimmick. And it never feels like a gimmick. It really, really felt like we were in his shoes. And that, it just impressed the hell out of me. Like, just really took me aback and made me sit back in awe of that script. That script and that performance. Anthony Hopkins was phenomenal, which we'll talk about in a minute. So you need to watch that one, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, definitely.
Best original screenplay, Judas and the Black Messiah, Minari, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal, and The Trial of Chicago 7. And the Oscar went to...
Promising Young Woman! Yay! Emerald Fennell is the first woman in 13 years to win Best Original Screenplay.
Mm.
And it was a damn good film.
I am still a little disappointed it didn't win more awards, honestly.
Me too.
That's a great film. And I will say, you know, we always have this debate about what should be nominated. Should it be the best film or it should be a movie that's the most entertaining, one you could come back and rewatch and da-da-da-da. If I were to base it on rewatchability, Promising Young Woman would be the winner. Do you agree with that? Or where do you stand? Like, is it your best picture of the year or...
That's a tough question. I would say in this best original screenplay category, it's the most rewatchable for me. But these competitors for the nominees for the original screenplay category were all so good. I mean, Judas and the Black Messiah, Minari, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal, and The Trial of Chicago 7. Those are all really excellent films. So you're not, I mean, I wouldn't have been disappointed if any of them had won, but I am happy to see Promising Young Woman win.
Me too. And she was so excited. That was great.
Yeah.
She was so excited. Best original song, Fight for You, Judas and the Black Messiah, Hear My Voice, The Trial of Chicago 7, Yusevic, Eurovision Song Contest, Eocene, The Life Ahead, Speak Now, One Night in Miami, and the Oscar went to.
Fight for You, Judas and the Black Messiah. Her won that one.
Loved their speech. They were so surprised.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely surprised.
Yeah, that's always a really cool moment to see people who are like, oh my gosh, I didn't expect this at all. So let me put together my speech. We're just genuinely humble people.
Those are the best ones, though. That was like, I wish more speeches were like that.
Oh my God. And I loved her, no pun intended, outfit, like everything about her, her whole vibe. She just seemed like incredible.
Yeah, that was a nice outfit. All right. Best original score. I just got creepy. Defy Bloods, Mank, Minari, News of the World and Soul. And the Oscar went to
Soul, the animated film.
And were you surprised? Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross, and John Baptiste. What did you think about that? It's funny because Trent Reznor was nominated in two categories. They were nominated in two categories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I all I knew is that I wanted Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross to win. I didn't care for which film because they're just so incredibly talented. That team is just super powerful. So I was just happy to see them win. But I also thought it was super cool that they gave John Baptiste the opportunity to speak as the third in their group.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of went on a little bit lengthy, but I respected it. I liked his enthusiasm. It was obviously a very incredible opportunity for him and an incredible moment in his life. So I thought it was cool that Atticus Ross and Trent Reznor kind of took the backside for him to go up there and talk, for Baptiste to go up there and talk, yeah, especially.
They're just like, we've been in this business for a while. This is your first big award. Mm-hmm. Take it. Earn it. Enjoy it. Yeah, it was great. Best documentary. And it's a great score, too. I mean, honestly. So of those, I definitely think it's the best score by far. Best documentary feature, Collective, Crip Camp, The Mole Agent, My Octopus Teacher, and Time. And probably one of the biggest upsets of the night, actually.
Yeah, which is funny. I just normally documentary feature isn't where you have your big upset. And right. My octopus teacher is the one who took it. Now, I haven't seen My Octopus Teacher, but I've heard some really cool things about it and the way that they filmed it.
It's really good. Just, it's on Netflix, so you can watch it.
Yeah, it just, I mean, it sounds really, really cool. So
the dude makes friends with an octopus. Like, and it looks like they're really friends, not just, oh, he shot it a certain way, and it looks like, no, man, they're like shaking hands and stuff. It's just, it's great. Absolutely cool. And if you can watch that and not have hope for the world, I just don't. I mean, it's a very hopeful movie, I would say. It just shows that friendship comes in many forms.
So beautiful.
Beautiful.
Best animated feature, Onward, Over the Moon, Shaun the Sheep Movie, Farmageddon. What? Soul and Wolf Walkers, which apparently is the Frances McDormand documentary. I don't know what the hell that was about. But anyway, the best animated feature, the Oscar went to?
Soul got its second award.
Yeah, I wasn't really surprised. That's Pixar. They seem to win this almost every year.
Yeah, basically. I was a little hopeful for Onward because between the ones that I had seen, that was the one I enjoyed the most. Mm-hmm. But Soul is still a good pick, so not mad.
Not mad about it. I like Onward. I mean, Onward and Soul were both probably the two that I went. Wolfwalkers is an interesting movie. I would like to see that redone with a bigger budget and traditional animation. I just would like to see what that would look like. Best international feature, Another Round, which I talked about on the last two episodes ago, I think. Better Days, Collective, The Man Who Sold His Skin, and Guasfare Sidi.
Not sure that that's how you say that, but Another Round is our winner.
I'm almost positive it's not how you say it. Don't hold it against me. Don't hold it against me. I only speak barely plausible English. So there you go. Another Round won, what you said. Correct?
Yes.
I heard you were right. Yep. Okay. Have you watched it yet? It's available on Hulu.
I haven't, but now I need to.
I'm very disappointed. So when I recommended it, you didn't need to, but no, it wins the freaking award. Now suddenly.
All right. Don't even start here because I had to use Patreon to get you to watch a movie that I've been telling you to watch for forever.
I'm busy. I'm trying to catch up on all these movies. That's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm busy watching other stuff.
That was probably the most emotional moment of the night because the director was talking about how he lost his daughter right after filming started. His daughter was supposed to be in the movie. It was a really sad, but also kind of powerful moment. So, you should YouTube that speech. I think that's beautiful.
Well, and also YouTube Tyler Perry's speech, because I think in terms of powerful, his really just blew it out of the park. Blew it out, knocked it out of the park, I think is what the idiom is.
The kids are saying. You know what? You're going to hear that one at the very end. You're going to hear part of it.
Oh, okay, good. Because it was beautiful. And I was like, dude, I get you. Like, I'm going to refuse hate too.
That's how we're going to close this podcast. Nobody can do it better than Tyler Perry because, man, he knocked that out for his humanitarian award. We'll get there later. But first, best supporting actor. Here's where we'll throw some names in there. Sacha Baron Cohen, The Trial of Chicago 7, Daniel Kaluuya, Judas and the Black Messiah, Leslie Odom Jr., One Night in Miami, Paul Raci, Sound of Metal, Lakeith Stanfield, for Judas and the Black Messiah. I feel bad for those two. Like, they're in the same category going against each other. But the winner
sitting next to each other.
Yeah.
The winner is Daniel Kaluuya, Judas and the Black Messiah.
Well, not even sitting next to each other. Lakeith Stanfield's in the upper row. He basically is in the bleachers. And they got...
Oh, at the end, weren't they sitting together?
I don't think so. I think they were in different spots. Okay. But I could be wrong. I could be wrong. It looked like one of those hedge bets thing where the Oscars like, well, I think Daniel's probably going to win this bad boy. So why don't we just put him up front so he can get to the stage a little faster. That's what it looked like to me, but
ouch.
Could be wrong. So what did you think? Deserved, right?
Oh, absolutely. What an incredible performance. I mean, not to say that I wasn't wowed by these other performances. They all deserve to be nominated for sure. And I really liked Lakeith Stanfield's performance as well in Judas and the Black Messiah. That was overall a really wonderful film, powerful film. But Daniel Kaluuya, I mean, he motivated you. Like, he inspired you. He had just that personality and that, I don't know. There was just something about it at all times where I was like, okay, whatever you say, man, I'm with you. Like, I am here. I will do whatever you need me to do.
I believe the response is, I am a revolutionary, I believe. all right. Well, we're going to hear a little bit of his speech as well, because I love hearing his accent, because I've seen him in so many movies. When I first heard his accent, I was like, wait, what? Who? What?
It is beautiful.
It is beautiful. Yeah, very, very strong accent. I'm like, you do a masterful. People don't give people with accents enough credit for sounding like they don't have an accent here in America. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty fantastic. So here is a little bit of his really powerful speech from Daniel Kaluuya.
And to Chairman Fred Hampton, bro, man, man, what a man, what a man. How blessed we are that we lived in a lifetime where he existed. Do you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Like, thank you for your light. He was on this earth for 21 years. 21 years, and he found a way to feed kids breakfast, educate kids, give free medical care against all the odds. He showed me, he taught me, him, Huey P. Newton, Bobby Seale, the Black Panther Party, they showed me how to love myself. And with that love, they overflowed it to the Black community and to other communities. And they showed us that the power of union, power of unity, that when they play divide and conquer, we say unite and ascend. Thank you so much for showing me myself. And yeah, man, there's so much work to do, guys. And that's on everyone in this room. This ain't no single man job. That's some real. And I look to everyone, every single one of you. You got work to do. Do you know what I'm saying? And I'm going to get back to work Tuesday morning, because tonight I'm going up. We're going up, you know what I mean? We're enjoying ourselves tonight because we've got to celebrate. We've got to celebrate life, man. We're breathing, we're walking. It's incredible. It's incredible. Like, it's incredible. My mom met my dad. They had sex. It's amazing. Like, do you know what I'm saying? I'm here. You know what I mean? So I'm so happy to be alive. So I'm going to celebrate that tonight. Do you know what I'm saying? And I appreciate every single person in the room. Appreciate everyone watching at home, you know. Love. Peace, love, and onwards. We go again.
All right, now we move on to Best Supporting Actress. Maria Bakalova from Borat, subsequent movie film. Glenn Close from Hillbilly Elegy, which is funny because she was nominated for a Razzie for the same performance. But
she was great. You know what? Take that Razzie and put it up your butthole.
Well, she could just knock it over with the butt. Olivia Colman for The Father, Amanda Seyfried for Mank, and Yoo Jung-yoon for Minari, and the Oscar went to
Yoo Jung-yoon. She is the first Korean person to win in one of the acting categories, and she is right now one of my favorite people in the entire universe.
Really?
I legitimately want to hang out with her. Have you seen how funny she is? And in that film, she was awesome. Like, I loved her in it. So I want to hang out with her sometime.
I remember, was it the BAFTAs where she won and she basically insulted all British people because they're snobbish?
Yes. Of course she doesn't mean to. It's not intentional. And I certainly am not laughing at her misunderstanding of, you know, English, but she's just very bold and forward. And it's just so different from American culture, and I really love and appreciate it. And she's just hilarious. I just want to have, like, Korean barbecue with her.
That is that's funny. And a little additional insight for people that were like, wow, is she hitting on Brad Pitt? She might have been, but he also was a producer on the film. So he also wasn't on set, would be my guess. He didn't come to set. So you could take that either way you want to.
I mean, I get it if she was hitting on him.
Yeah, I get it. All right. Now, Best Director, Lee Isaac Chung for Minari, Emma Fennell for Promising Young Woman, David Fincher for Mank, Thomas Vinterberg, Another Round, and Chloe Zhao for Nomadland. And the Oscar went to
Chloe Zhao, the second woman ever and the first woman of color to win the Oscar for Best Director.
That's pretty fantastic. Good for her. You know, mm-hmm. Even though I'm not a fan of the movie, I admire, it's one of those things where I respect what she did with the film, so I can definitely see her getting Best Director. Best Picture, mm-hmm. Got a different opinion of, but Best Director, I will give her. Absolutely. That she basically took a couple actors and worked them around real people and got real emotions and real, just real heart, I guess, from many of the people that she was having act who weren't really professional actors. And I think that's hard to do. So I definitely respect that.
Yeah, definitely.
It doesn't necessarily make a great film, but but it does make for a great director. Best actress, Viola Davis. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
Beautiful. Oh my God.
Yeah. Andra Day for the United States versus Billie Holiday. I really like her now. I just love her. The shade she tossed at the Academy just while she's there. And she's like, yeah, I don't care. You guys are wrong on this one. Vanessa Kirby for Pieces of a Woman. Frances McDormand for Nomadland. And Carey Mulligan. That's never going to not be funny. Carey Mulligan for Promising Young Woman. And the Oscar went to
Frances McDormand for Nomadland.
My favorite part of that award is all the people that were surprised by it. I'm like, she's been taking every freaking award. What are you surprised by? I just don't understand. She's winning everything, literally everything.
I mean, she was one of the only things that was really good about that movie, to be fair.
I mean, yeah.
She was great. The movie was not great. The directing, I can understand the inspiration and the work that she had to put in. Yes. Yep. Yeah, I can respect all of that. And I think Frances McDormand, I know she's super talented and, you know, she was good, but it was everything else that lacked it. But we'll get to that when we get to it.
Yeah, it's coming. We're almost there. All right. Best actor, Riz Ahmed for Sound of Metal. Chadwick Boseman for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Anthony Hopkins for The Father. Gary Oldman for Mank. Steven Yeun for Minari. And I will say, this was a really tough category. Just across the board. But the Oscar went to
Anthony Hopkins for The Father.
Now, here's where I got to ask you a question. First off, Chadwick Boseman was definitely seen as a front runner for this award. And I'm sure for many, that's because he passed away and it would be like an honor for him. Now, some people feel differently about that. I want to know kind of what's your stance on an actor getting an award, not because they pass away, but where it could definitely be seen as a way to honor them after they pass. Do you agree with
Because it's that? Their last performance,
yeah,
sort of thing.
It's their last performance, essentially. How do you take that?
Here's my thing for Chadwick Boseman. I don't know anybody who has the strength and the courage and the bravery to... I mean, he was not only fighting cancer, he was performing like a top-notch actor. We didn't know that there was all of this going on underneath. So for me, that stands out as an incredible performance to be honored, to be awarded. I mean, there's a component. I feel like you have to consider all of the attributes and all of the circumstances of the situation, of somebody's performance, of somebody's editing, of, you know, all of those different things. Like, you have to account for everything. And when I see Chadwick Boseman, who we know is incredibly talented, pull off another great performance, but doing it while dealing with cancer, I mean, I just don't know how anybody can compete with that. Most people who are going through cancer can barely get up and live their day to day. And he kept that as part of his very private life because he wanted to continue doing his work, doing this art. So I definitely think that, you know, he should have been honored with that, but not just because he passed away and it's his last performance, because of everything he had to do in spite, and so that way he could give a great performance.
And it was still Oscar worthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great pitch for me. I totally get where you're coming from. It would definitely be between those two. I do think, you know, it isn't one of those things where I've seen actors nominated after they passed away. And I'm like, okay, well, that's just throwing them a bone because they died. And I am not a fan of that. What you're explaining, I agree with that. I do think his performance was Oscar worthy. Easily one of the best performances of the year. He'd be nominated whether he was alive or not. I do think the cancer adds to that. Whether you want to factor it in or not, it adds to it. And the same note, like, I can't take away from Anthony Hopkins because I know you haven't seen the film, but he's absolutely brilliant in that movie. It's probably, and I'm talking about a guy who was Hannibal Lecter and basically created the character, even though the character wasn't new then. You know, I mean, it had been in books, it had already been in a movie, and he still made the character his own. Man, it's a really hard performance to watch because it's so good. That's what makes it uncomfortable to watch, because it's so good. So I wouldn't fault either one of them for winning. But I do fault people for thinking it should have been one way or the other, because I just don't think that's right. I think people should judge it on their own perception of what the best actor should be. And both of those actors were deserving. Actually, everybody in the category was deserving. Mm-hmm. Even Gary Oldman. I didn't even like that movie, but he still gave a fantastic performance in a you know, bad movie, honestly. And but yeah, I would have been mad if he won, though, honestly, between the other category, between the other candidates. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And Chadwick Boseman honestly should have been nominated so many times by now, because I know Black Panther made him super popular, but he took so many icons and made them his own character, which is insane to me. James Brown, and go look through his filmography. He's done it like 4 or 5 times now. He's just a wonderfully talented actor, was a wonderfully talented actor. What I would say is, regardless of the award, I think because of circumstances, and I don't mean to, you know, you should give one actor any more favor than anyone else, but because of his circumstances, the height of his career, came out of nowhere, I think there should have been something. And his importance to the Black community, I think there should have been something for like a tribute specifically for him, or in the memoriam, a little bit something. I don't know how you do that without feeling like favoritism. I honestly don't know the answer to it, but there could have been something.
I don't think it's necessarily favoritism. I think it's honoring someone that, a lot of times when someone is going through a medical condition or disease, or they're literally dying, they don't continue doing their work. They don't continue trying to inspire others. And that's not to take anything away. It's just they don't have energy. They don't have, I mean, they're missing so much of their themselves due to the disease that they're fighting. And so for me, I think so much of it is he created so much movement for Black actors, for Black kids to look up to that didn't exist before. And like you said, taken those characters and really made them his own, and was so talented. But in spite of everything he was going through, continued to, I don't want to say serve the world, but he kind of did, in like a very selfless way. He was like, you know what, this gives me happiness. You know, obviously he wouldn't keep doing it if it didn't make him happy, but he also loved to make people smile. That's super evident from everything that we've seen about him and all of the things that he was doing to make little kids smile, or to, you know, reach out and hug these individuals that came to him and were a huge inspiration for them and gave them a piece of entertainment that they had been missing for generations, for years, decades. And so to honor somebody like that for their complete dedication to the arts, I mean, I don't think that's favoritism. I think that's just truly honoring them for the effort and the work they put in, and us giving a piece of that back to his family.
Yeah. Felt bad for his poor widow who was in the stands, and then they had to be dead last, thinking probably in her mind, I'm sure, because the assumption was that he was going to win and then he didn't win. So it just breaks my heart for that family. I mean, I just feel like it's an added slap that wasn't pain. Needed, you know?
Yeah.
Just wasn't needed. Yeah. Anyway, we've already talked about that, but congratulations, Anthony Hopkins. Like, I can't fault his performance. He was fantastic in that movie. And I do want to, just because he didn't get a chance to do his acceptance speech, so he threw it online the day after, because he apparently didn't even expect to win. So we're going to play that here for you, because you know what? The Academy sucks. They should have allowed this for an 83-year-old man who didn't want to, you know, endanger his life. Jackasses. All right, so here you go. Here's Anthony
and it was
Hopkins'
so sweet
speech.
And selfless.
Good morning. Here I am in my homeland in Wales, and at 83 years of age, I did not expect to get this award. I really didn't. And very grateful to the Academy and thank you. And I want to pay tribute to Chadwick Boseman, who's taken from us far too early. And again, thank you all very much. I really did not expect this. So I feel very privileged and honored. Thank you.
Okay, lastly, Best Picture. The nominees.
Is it though? No. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's not. It's not. No. You know how you know it's not Best Picture? They couldn't even put it at the end where it belonged. They're like, we know this thing doesn't qualify. Come on, this is a different kind of year. The nominees are The Father, Judas and the Black Messiah.
Both Mank, worthy.
Yeah, both better, for sure. Mank, Minari, still better. Worthy. Nomadland.
Nomadland.
Nomadland. Nomadland. I just want to make sure you guys heard what...
Meh.
Was. Yeah, there you go. Promising Young Woman, way better. Sound of Metal, way better. The Trial of Chicago 7, way better. Okay, so of those, Amanda, you know, of all of these deserving nominees, the only ones I would say probably don't deserve to be here are Mank or Stank and Nomadland. So of these nominees, which one won the Best Picture Oscar?
Nomadland.
I think they should have just... stop the show at that point. I mean, we were all kind of sad and just like, all right. I mean,
that's I kind of started at. To check out. I was like, are you kidding me? I was to the point where I was like, I don't even care who wins. And then I was like, well, I want to see if Chadwick Boseman wins. So I obviously held out and waited. But maybe that's why they did it like that. Because they're like, wait, people are going to check out once they know we picked the worst one.
Right. This is where I'm just going to jump on the QAnon back. This whole thing was rigged. This whole thing was rigged. Whole thing was rigged. I don't understand it, but the whole thing was rigged. I just...
It's just super... I don't know. I don't get it. And maybe it's just me. Maybe I just don't get it.
Not just you. Fine. I don't get it either. Watch the whole movie. I even started watching it again thinking, am I doing it wrong? Like, am I watching the movie wrong? Should I watch it upside down? Should I turn the TV on the side? What do I got to do to enjoy this?
Am I supposed to be on shrooms to enjoy this? Like, what do I need to do differently?
It's like, I enjoy the idea of it. Frances McDormand, I thought, did a wonderful job with it, but I just didn't. I was so bored. I mean,
yeah, it was
first
very
and
boring.
Foremost, I think a movie has to be entertaining. Not like, not entertaining like whiz bang, special effects. Look at them, you know, jets flew by. Not like that. I don't want it to be Fast and Furious all the time, but I gotta not check my watch every 5 seconds going, is this thing over yet? Is she done shitting in the van yet? Like, what? Okay. I get it. She's trying to find herself. Can she find herself yet? Because I'd really like to be done. That's too bad. What I would recommend is if you watch Nomadland and you didn't understand why it won Best Picture, that instead you should go watch The Father. You should watch Judas and the Black Messiah. You should watch Minari. You should watch Promising Young Woman. You should watch Sound of Metal. And then you should watch Trial of Chicago 7. You can skip Mank.
Yeah. Yep. Just so don't
mean.
Do it.
We're so mean. All right. You know what? That's going to do it for all of the nominees, but we still have one prize to give, and that's the winner of our Oscar contest for those that entered, all of you. It's been accounted for. We have done the tallies. We've picked the winner, and the winner is...
Amanda Spa.
Spa or Spa?
Spa? I don't know. We're kind of making a guess here. I mean, we have your email address. We just don't want to announce it. So we'll email you. But I will say that this was very close. And we should also give a shout out to Kyle Nolan. So we started going down the big categories, right, to figure out which ones did they get right. They both had the same answers for Best Picture, Actor, Actress, Supporting.
Oh, so
directing.
They knew Chadwick Boseman wasn't going to win, too. So they knew, don't put that last. They had that figured out.
Well, I don't remember what they picked, but they had the same answers. So even the ones they got wrong, they were still getting the same ones
they
wrong.
They got wrong together.
But then it came to cinematography. And that's where our winner, Amanda, had gotten it right. Kyle didn't. So they both did a wonderful job with their guessing game. It's just we kind of went down those big categories.
We go by category when we have ties, which has happened a couple times in the past. So, you know, that's how it goes. Thankfully, we didn't have to get down to the short subjects, which sometimes can be the deciding factor.
Hey, that upset could have changed things for real.
Sure.
That documentary.
Sure. It could have. All right. Well, that's all. Is there anything else you want to say on this year's Oscars? Is there anything you want to see next year? Like anything from this year you want them to bring back for next year's event?
I like the intimacy of it. I really did. And I think the Oscars will be back to kind of more traditional Oscars next year.
Did you miss them singing the songs, or are you okay with them not singing the songs?
You know, somehow we ended up with the same amount of time and nobody sang songs. So, but like I said, I don't think that that would have worked as well for how small that room was and the performances being in there. That would have just been super weird. So I liked that they had kind of a live DJ doing it all, and we got to see his directorial debut, which looks really cool. But I like seeing the live performances of the songs. You know, music is a really important art, and it can make or break a movie, for sure. You know, that adds all of the tone and the atmosphere to a film and a scene. So I like it. But I like it when it's on a big stage and it seems like it's meant to be performancey.
Well, at a train station, they could have done it like you would see at a train station, where it's just the guy with the saxophone in the corner, you know, and he's just got a box waiting for change. Could do that.
Hey, if they're at a train station, they could have just like watched, they could have performed on the train as the train passed by. So it would have been really brief, like one song and then a few carts down, the next
zooming
song.
Zooming by with the band in the car.
Hey, look, they had no problem zooming by the In Memoriam. Why not the songs?
Like that?
Yeah, but we would have just done like one song and then a few carts down. It would have been another band doing their song and then a few carts down.
Socially,
you know,
distanced cool. Train cars.
Yeah, I like it.
You know where they did need some music? When those speeches were going. Because, damn.
Ooh, Lord.
A few of them were thanking people, you know, they don't remember, barely. So come on, let's get to it. Can we make a list of like the top six people you want to thank, and that's it? Or top 10. You get 10 people. That's it. I don't want to hear about your grade school teacher. I just don't. Let's get to the point. And that's where the band comes in handy. Let's play them off, man. Get them out of there.
I just feel like it would have been so awkward for even like the DJ to play music and cue them off because they're so close to everybody else. So close.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been really awkward.
You know, that's probably why they have the band below. The orchestra is always below the floor because then you can't throw things at them. You know, it's much harder to hit them. Well, here, they just be throwing forks or whatever at a poor guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he's right across the hall. That's not cool. Yeah. I'm good with the no host thing. I just would like the opening to be done, like a cinematic opening. I just think mm-hmm. that's a good way to begin the Oscars. But
for sure.
We'll see what happens. And I like the cinematic shooting of the winners. I think that mm-hmm. was really well done.
I'll say in closing of this, since the Academy lacked in honor to Chadwick Boseman, spend some time this weekend and honor him yourself.
Oh, I like it. Go watch mm-hmm. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. It's on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. Do like a weekend of Boseman, you know?
I like it. A Chad weekend.
Yeah.
Well, share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group or on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can rate and subscribe to our podcast on your preferred podcast app. You can also find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter and at RJohnDraws, Amanda's on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk, and at Sink Into This, and me on the Blacklist Exposed and presenting Hitchcock, and at Aaron Smirks on Twitter. Remember, guys, the next time you head to a theater or watch the Oscars next year comfortably from your couch, buy popcorn. Boy, the Oscars are going to be so different next year. They ain't going to be in a train station.
Which is a little unfortunate considering I just gave them a $1 million idea.
Absolutely. In order to end this episode properly, I wanted to come back to the best speech of the night, which was Tyler Perry, because he was there accepting the Jean Hersholt Humanitarian Award. And he said something I thought we all need to really pay attention to. Take a listen, and everybody have a wonderful week.
And I remember being a little boy and coming home, and she was at home, like, what are you doing at home? You're supposed to be at work. She was in tears that day. She said there was a bomb threat, and she couldn't believe that someone wanted to blow up this place where she worked, where she took care of all these toddlers. It was the Jewish Community Center. My mother taught me to refuse hate. She taught me to refuse blanket judgment. And in this time, and with all of the internet and social media and algorithms and everything that wants us to think a certain way, the 24-hour news cycle, it is my hope that all of us would teach our kids, and not only to remember, just refuse hate. Don't hate anybody. I refuse to hate someone because they are Mexican or because they are black or white or LGBTQ. I refuse to hate someone because they are a police officer. I refuse to hate someone because they are Asian. I would hope that we would refuse hate. And I want to take this Jean Herschel Humanitarian Award and dedicate it to anyone who wants to stand in the middle, no matter what's around the wall, stand in the middle, because that's where healing happens. That's where conversation happens. That's where change happens. It happens in the middle. So anyone who wants to meet me in the middle, to refuse hate, to refuse blanket judgment, and to help lift someone's feet off the ground, this one is for you too. God bless you, and thank you, Academy. I appreciate it. Thank you.